You pray and then you do it yourself. I think that's fabulous. Maybe you don't like it. Like Red Skelton, I think the wrong bus came in tonight. You pray and then you do it yourself. You've heard many times in this fellowship, if you pray for potatoes, reach for the hole. You know. If you pray for potatoes, reach for the hole. God helps those who help themselves. You know, it says that in the good book. God helps those who help themselves. Now, I think of this power greater than ourselves as the reserve tank. You know, in your gasoline tank. You got some reserve there on the side. But it never comes on to the reserve until you've run out of your other gasoline. I think of this power greater than ourselves as a reserve tank. When we have run out of our own resources, then what we lack is supply. But our first chore is to do it ourselves. This Catholic priest and the Jewish rabbi were sitting at a prize fight. And one of the boys that were fighting ducked down in his corner and crossed himself. And the rabbi says to Catholic father, he says, what does that mean? And the priest says, don't mean a damn thing if you can't fight. You know? You pray and then you do it yourself, you see. Here are the steps we took. Now, it does not say, here are the steps we read. Here are the steps we heard read. Here are the steps we discussed in last night's discussion meeting. Don't say that. It don't say, here are the steps we interpreted. Don't say that. If you're still nipping a little and want to keep on, just interpret the steps. You can nip and interpret and interpret and nip and nip and interpret, and then you nip and don't interpret. Don't say here are the steps we interpreted. Neither does it say here are the steps we conned God into taking for us. They don't say that. Here are the steps we conned God into taking for us. It says here are the steps we took. Now God has a tremendous place in this program of ours, and without him we would have no program and we would have no sobriety. But it is not to take these steps for me. This is my job. Here are the steps I took and take. TOOK, took. This is my job. Now at the beginning of step number 12, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Why do we, with our keen alcoholic brains, think that we can have a spiritual awakening as the result of 11 steps that we ain't took? You know? It says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Well, this implies that we've taken 11 steps before we get to the 12. That we have applied these things to us. And yet we don't do it. We tell each other, oh, it's not particularly important how you take them or when. You take them as you feel like it, or you don't have to take them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Take 1 and 12. You know? We hear a lot about two-stepping in this society. There's no such thing as a two-stepper. There isn't any such thing as a two-stepper. There's a half of the first and a third of the 12th. And I don't even make one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and ran to carry the message. That's not even one step. Not even one. It's a half and a third. How are you going to carry a message you ain't got? It says in the back of the book, it is obvious that we cannot transmit something that we do not have. See to it that your own house is in order. You see? Why can't we read these things? And do them. You know, kids, we're dealing with one of the most insidious and one of the most destructive things in life. Alcoholism is a terminal disease. It is a terminal disease. And it is progressive. And the only thing ahead of you and I, if we keep drinking, is permanent insanity or an alcoholic death. Just two things can happen to us. Permanent insanity or an alcoholic death. Serious deal. And yet we tell each other you don't have to take a written inventory. I heard a guy, we had one, out at Redondo Beach. He'd get up at this podium and say, I've been sober 5 years. I've never taken a written inventory. I never read that book clear through you. Don't let him tell you you got to do this or that or the other thing. You don't. I'm sober. He got up to 6 and he got up to 7, but he didn't make 8. He's drunk right now. Here are the steps we took. Now, there's a very definite reason for taking these steps. Because the key to sobriety, the key to this new way of life, is the acceptance of ourselves completely and totally as a defeat in the business of living, as a failure in the business of living. To accept defeat. To be able to abandon ourselves completely. Completely. Because, you see, we got to roll away the stone before we can get help from God. We got to roll away the stone. Something for us to do. And the first 9 steps of this program are there for the primary purpose of squeezing us out of ourselves. We're in a vice. And every one of those steps is just tightening that vice a little bit. And pretty soon the damned ego's gone. People say to me all the time, Chuck, how do you surrender? How do you surrender? The first 9 steps will surrender anybody that will apply them to himself. You can't do it and not become surrender. You've got to. Let's look at them for just a second with this in mind. The first step is a twofold admission of defeat. I admit that I am an alcoholic, that my life is unmanageable. Well, now, this is not according to my former pattern. I have lived 43 years. And I never admitted that I couldn't run my own life, and I never admitted that I was powerless over 1 ounce of flit either. This is a total and complete turnabout in thinking and action. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. Imagine a drunk doing that. And that my life is unmanageable by me. This is just a direct reverse of the way I've lived for 43 years. came to believe that power greater than self could restore us to sanity. A left-handed admission we're as nutty as a fruitcake. We're nuts. Power greater than self, he gets in that step too. And I got to tell you this little one. I was listening to a colored boy, 35-ish, son of a gal that's been in her program for a long time. And he was talking a little, and he said, I think I always realized that there's power that kept the universe in order, kept the planets from bumping into each other and had the sun come up. Says, I think I've always recognized this. But he says, it never occurred to me there's bigger than I am. You see? That's us, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We're nuts. No use to restore a sane man to sanity. You see? So the squeeze plays on. We're in the vice. This is absolutely contrary to this keen alcoholic mind of mind. Third step, you got to get a new driver. Now, how many of you alkies ever voluntarily surrendered the wheel? Did you just go out to the parking lot and say, honey, you better take the keys, I'm drunk? Like hell you did. He says, get in if you're going. I'm driving. It's my car. If you don't want to ride with me, get a cab. But we don't give them $2 to get a cab with. We fight them all over the parking lot for 2 hours. Here we got to get a new driver, just in the third step. This is just three. A new driver. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Well, what's this doing to that thing called ego? What is this doing to a thinking and action process of, in my case, 43 years? It's destroying it. That's what it's doing. Completely destroying it. Now, if you think the next one is an ego builder, get you a thick pad and a long pencil and start writing. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, this is a switch to a guy that's taken everybody's inventory that he ever saw, but his own, for years. Hell, I was an expert on your inventory. I tell you what's wrong with you. I've crossed the room. I didn't have to get close. Well, this is different. We take a moral inventory, a thorough moral inventory of ourselves, you know. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Me. So we sit down with ourselves and we write down there on that thing our motivations for action. What's been transpiring in my life? What have I been doing? What is my motivation? A thorough and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. This don't mean that I got to put down every time I turned left when I should have turned right. It's the intent. It's the motive. It's the thing that makes us tick that we want to look at. You know? And the squeeze play is definitely on. And number five is worse than all four of them. Number five is a king-size ego killer. Because it says here that we admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, to another person, the exact nature of our wrongs. Well, now, I can write it down, and I've got it. I'm in possession of it. I can admit to God and to me, hidden out behind the house, and nobody knows yet but me and God. It's still quite a secret. But when I lay this dirty linen out in front of another human being, boy, if you got any ego left after that, you ain't done it. Get honest. This is a killer. Nothing in me that I won't share. Nothing to hold back. Lay that muck right out on the table and go over it with it. Another human being. A man or a woman that you feel you can talk with in confidence. A priest or a preacher or somebody. I like it with another alcoholic. Because I'm funny that way. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another individual the exact nature of our wrongs. And then we became willing to give this muck away. We've done a bad job. We've done a bad job. We can't get rid of these things on our own. If we could have, we would have. So we become entirely ready to give them away, to have God remove all these defects of character. And we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. We become willing to give them away, and we give them away. Now, I'm a simple guy. I do not believe it's necessary for us to pull these defects of character back out of the trash bin for years and years and years and beat our brains out with them. I don't read my book like that. My book says I became willing to give them away, and I gave them away. And I'm simple enough. People say, how'd you know if I haven't got them? If I've still got them, I didn't give them away. I'm simple. I still retain them, or I take them back. So you give them away till you don't take them back. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. There's not much ego here. And what is left is destroyed in the next two. These next two steps are the most fabulous things on the face of the earth. This is like an inside shower. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Oh, don't sell these short. These are the greatest. What a feeling it is when we have become willing to and do face these people that we have harmed and tell them that we have harmed them, and we're not only here to apologize but to tell them we'll make restitution as soon as possible. You know, I had a picnic with this some time back. It's been several years ago now. I got a call on a Friday night from a guy in Whittier. And he says, Chuck, I'm sitting here with my revolver in my lap, just ready to blow my brains out. But Jim told me not to shoot until I talk to you. He says, what do you got to say? I says, you called me on a bad time. I says, this Friday, I'm talking tonight, I'm talking tomorrow night, and I'm talking Sunday night. I've got Monday night open. Now, I says, you can shoot yourself on Tuesday just as well as you can tonight. So if you want to talk to me, come down Monday night and we'll talk. If you don't, go ahead and blow your brains out. So he came down on Monday night. And we were sitting there talking. And amongst other things, he was a gambler. And he lost large amounts of money that he didn't have. And we got down here to this man's step. And I said to the guy, you know, we got to be able to go to these guys and say, look, I'm not the big shot that I would have had you believe. I'm an alcoholic. I've done you wrong. Now I'm here to make amends. Why, says Chuck, I can't do that. He says, quite a few of these people are professional gamblers, and says, you're tough. Why, says, it'll kill me. I said to the guy, you reckon it will? Why, he says, sure. Well, I says, that's good. You won't have suicide on your mind then. Let them do it. The guy started laughing, and he's still laughing. He's still laughing. He's paid off all his debts, and he's living like a king. You know? Oh, don't sell these short. This is like an inside shop. You get rid of all that stuff. And you're a free man. Now, that's 9 steps. And what have we done? We've rolled away the stone. We've cleared away the wreckage of the past. We've washed a few windows. And now we can look deep within ourselves with Brother Lawrence. Look deep within ourselves. And find ourselves, which includes our relationship with each other and with God. Remember, Brother Lawrence said, if you would find God, look deeper than yourself, because it's the only place you're ever going to find him. It's the only place you're ever going to find him. Well, we can't look deeper than ourselves till we've cleaned the mess up. We got to get rid of the overburden. And then we can look deeper than ourselves and find ourselves, which includes our relationship to each other and to God. And this is the great discovery. This is the great discovery. This is what life's all about. This is the thing that religion calls being born again. Being born out of conscious separation, out of aloneness that Tommy talked so much about last night, into unity. Into unity. Conscious separation. Conscious unity. Conscious separation, the problem. Conscious unity, the answer. And so we're born again. And now we can pray. Seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious awareness of the living presence of the Almighty. We can do this now. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our very own God. God as I understand him, God as you understand him. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Oh, thank God for this. This is the way I live. This is the only way I can live. This is the only way I can live. I can't run my life. I can't run yours. I can't run my business. I can't run my wife. I can't run anything. And I know it. I had 43 years to do that. And I ended up in the bottom of the snake pit. I can't do it, but I can pray for knowledge of his will for me and try to carry it out. And I get it. I live with the total expectancy of guidance and direction in everything that I do. You know, I am probably the worst mess that you will ever look at when I know what I'm doing. I can't even get to the right meeting when I know exactly where I'm going. I can't make it. I've told some of you here this weekend. I was going to a meeting in Pasadena a year or two ago. About a year ago, I guess. And I know exactly where I'm going. I have my names in the little squares on the Girl Scout calendar, you know, and I knew where I was going. I was going to Roy Seeker in Pasadena. I could see it written in the square. Hell, I could see it just as plain. And I went to Pasadena. And I got there in time to get a sandwich and a cup of coffee, which I did. Went to the meeting, and the place was dark. And I said to myself, this is something wrong here. You know? So I get out in my little book, and I look, and the Roy Seeker meeting's on Tuesday night. This is Monday. Villa Street's Monday night, but I'm not going to Villa Street. I'm going to Roy Seeker. So I say to myself, you damn fool, you put it in the wrong square. Now, mind you, I'm within a mile of Villa Street, and I'm 65 miles from home. But do I go to Villa Street? No. I wasn't going to Villa Street. I was going to Roy Seeker. So I went home. Well, Mrs. C was talking someplace that night, so I unlocked the door and walked in. The phone was ringing. I went over and answered, and the man says, where in the hell are you? I says, I'm on the other end of this phone. You're an ignorant bastard. Well, he says, you're not supposed to be. He says, there's 300 of us sitting up here at Villa Street waiting for you to talk. Now, there is the way I run my life. It's quite a convenient thing for me to be able to pray for knowledge, his will, for me and the power to carry it out. I'll tell you that. And having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these things, and we can't do them and miss it. We can think we miss it because we might think that a spiritual awakening is something different. Something different. Something ethereal, something mysterious that might light on us or miss us. No. No, if we do these things, we will have a spiritual awakening. Tommy says, last night you feel peculiar, you know. And you wake up and find out you're healthy. You know? You've never been healthy before. We feel a little peculiar, too, because life is good. Life is good. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. We tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We tried to give this thing away that has been given to us. And in the doing, again, we prove something. Now, we never find out unless we do. Because, you see, action is a magic word. The only way on earth to convert intellectual knowledge into wisdom is through action. Act as though I am and I will be, saith the Lord. action. So we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And in attempting to give this thing away, we discovered that this has never been a getting life. It never was. All the conditioning that I had had in home, in church, and in school goes right out the window. Because I was conditioned to believe that I had to outthink, outperform, and outmaneuver in order to eke out a miserable living out of an unfriendly universe. And I beat my brains out doing that for 43 years. 21 years ago, I started trying to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I started trying to make amends to the woman and the kids that I'd crucified. I started trying to get even with the boss because he'd paid me for something I hadn't done. Trying to do something for God's kids that they needed to have done because I wanted to. And found that this has never been a getting life at all. It's always been a giving life. The more you pour out without a price tag on it, the more you have, because that's the way it is. It's not a reward for well-being, for good. It's not a all-day sucker for being a good boy. It's the way it is. This is the way it is. The more I pour out without a price tag on it, the more I have. How do I know? All I got to do is look in my own books. That's all I got to do. Infinitely more good has come into my life in 21 years than the entire previous 43. In every department of life. Every department of life. And I've never spent 5 seconds in 21 years trying to bring it about. Not 5 seconds. This is the way it is. It's a giving life. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in forgiving that we are forgiven. And it is in dying to self that we are born into the reality of life. The reality of God. The reality of unity. And we never know till we do it. And practice these principles in all of our affairs. And we are made whole. How fortunate can we be? How fortunate can we be? I am what I am this morning because of the accident of total failure. Total failure. I can take no credit even for coming here or even for living long enough to get here. There is no credit due me for anything because my determination, my choice, my decision was never to come here. And until I ran out of choice, I couldn't come. And I came here, what for? To find God? No. I'd been hunting for God for 30 years, and I'd given up. To get my wife back? No, she was gone, should be gone. And I wasn't entitled to have her back, and I knew it. To get back the love of my kids? No. They were gone and should be gone, and I wasn't entitled to have them back. To get my job back? I knew that the boss meant what he said when he said, if you ever step foot in this plant again, I'm going to throw you through the window. To find peace of mind and surrender to purpose, never heard of it. I came here hoping against hope that I might find a way to live that didn't include that alcohol. I would have settled for the meanest old unhappy sobriety on earth. just so I don't have to drink anymore. Because I can't die with this kind of a record. I loved that wife. And I loved those kids. And they had nothing to remember but a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk writhing in the floor. So I've got to have a little time to rub out what I've written on the blackboard of life. And I came to a bunch of drunks. The people I dislike most on earth. Because, you see, I was a drunk, and I hated me, and I hated all of you. And I couldn't come to drunks for help. But there wasn't any place else to go. There wasn't any place else to go. And people like you took me on their laps and rocked me to sleep. Strangers to me. But you see, I wasn't a stranger to them. Because I was a drunk. I was a drunk when I got here. They weren't. They were alcoholics. You see, we're drunks till we get here. And then we're alcoholics. You see? And they rocked me to sleep. And they said to me, if you want what we've got, do the things that we've done. Here are the steps we took. Just do these things one day at a time to the best of your ability. See what happens. Don't drink today, they said. Not that you've got to be sober 21 years. I'd have died if they'd told me that. But they didn't. They said, just don't drink today. Stay as close to us as you can, they said. Stay close to us. And they gave me a few names, and they said, now if you get hurt and too bad, call before you drink. Call before you drink. And let's see if we can't help each other. And I saw, and I heard, and I felt. And I decided I wanted what you had. And became willing to go to any length to get it. And I've been coming back ever since. I reckon I've attended maybe 4.5, 5 meetings a week for 21 years. But since the day I discovered that I was sober, which was 6 months after I got here, I never came to one of these meetings in fear. I come to these meetings because I want to. I found life in these meetings. For the first 6 months that I lived in Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous was my home. See, I didn't have any home. And I come, and I'll continue to come, as long as there's breath in me. Now, isn't it marvelous that you come here willing to settle for just a way to live that don't include that flit, and find the whole package, and find the whole package? How fortunate can we be? How fortunate can we be? And those amongst us who think you might have lost some time, oh, I hear this so often. You didn't lose any time. You didn't lose an hour. I didn't lose a second. I didn't spend 1 second in hell that wasn't necessary. Because, you see, this is the only way I could have ever surrendered. I had to burn up. And in order to get help from this power greater than myself, I had to be able to recognize the need for this help. As long as I was going to do it myself, there was no help. There was no help. God was willing, but I wasn't. So I had to become willing. Now, out of this way of life have come these things. I haven't had to have a drink or pill for almost 21 years. In January the 10th, if I live that long and don't drink, I'll get a cake with 21 candles on. Now that's not bad. That's not bad. Because physical sobriety and life are synonymous with me. I can't have one without the other. It's the greatest gift God could give me, that I might live today without having to drink. So that's good. 21 years of it. Maybe 7,700 days that I would not have had, but for the grace of God through the miracle of AA. That's not bad. What else? I got a new body out of it. Took me 3.5 years to get over falling on my face after my last drunk. And I haven't fallen on my face for 16.5 years now. And that ain't bad. Got a new body out of it. What else? My family was put back together. Miss C and I have completed 41 years. If we're still around in June 24th, we'll have 42 years in double harness. And that ain't bad. The boys, we're getting along pretty good. And that ain't bad. What else? I owned the business they threw me out of. Now that's impossible. That's impossible. This is something I never even dreamed of whilst drunk. But there it is. And that ain't bad. But what else? Something that is infinitely greater than all of those things. I have a God of my very own. My very own. And I just woke up to the fact that there he was. The guy I'd been hunting for forever. There he was. And wherever I am, he is. And I have a lot of fun with him. I'm not afraid of him. And I don't think he's afraid of me. And I share everything in life with him. Everything in life I share with him. The good and the bad and the indifferent. Just like a knot-headed kid. Something bad I do, you know, and I do. I take that into the closet with me. And I say, look, Dad, look what I did yesterday. Isn't this awful? Isn't this a hell of a thing for a guy like me to do? But I did it, and I know why. And I don't like it, and you don't like it. And I'm going to do better. And with your help, I'll do a lot better. Sure, thank you. And I throw it away. I never care it another second. And a good thing happens, like something like this morning. And I take that in the closet and I say, look, Dad, isn't this terrific? Isn't this wonderful? It couldn't happen to a bum like me, but it did. And I know where it came from. And I sure thank you. Because, you see, it's not normal to walk alone. It's not normal to walk alone. I walked alone for 43 years. It's cold outside. It's normal for us to walk down the high road of life with our arms around each other. sharing our experience, strength, and hope one with another in love. This is normal. This is normal. It's not normal to be away from the Father's house. It's normal to become, as little children, totally dependent on this great thing called God. It's normal, just as normal as breathing. Because, you see, without God, there would be no breathing. Without God, no life. Without God, no intelligence. Without God, no peace. Because, you see, truly, truly, those first two words of the little prayer that we're about to recite together mean what they say. Our Father.